There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We have not yet heard the reaction from one of my favorite guests to the verdict in the Alec Murdoch trial. Scott Roeder of Evidence Room and Forensic Reconstruction is here to talk that. Last time we had spoken right before the verdict came in, the thought was that it could be a hung jury, and I was right there with you, Scott. I'm really surprised that everything came back as quickly as it did. What was your reaction?
Well, frankly, I have a stomachache, Tony, because I've been eating a lot of crow.
Yeah.
I really thought it was going to be a hung jury. The fact that proves one thing, that when you try to predict the outcome of a trial, it's very tricky business because you never know what a jury is going to say. And they proved me so wrong on this. I'm willing to admit it. Here's the thing. We're past the COVID era, right?
Yeah.
And we're now back doing things in real life. And as an expert witness who testifies in court, testifies live in front of another lawyer during deposition, cross-examination, there's a tactile, tangible, dare I say, smell, feeling, environment when you're in the courtroom live doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can tell you is I think the jury smelled a rat. And they read his body language. They listened to what he was saying, and they called bullshit.
Do you think it was because they had a very controlled input of information going to them, and there was basically just a steady feed of this guy is slimy, this guy can't be trusted, over and over and over? And then on the outside, we had all that, but we had even more context, more things that never even made it into court. And were those other things what made us on the outside kind of think maybe it'll be hung? But they were so
well
fed a steady diet of this guy's guilty that's where it went so easy.
Well, I think that, and I'll say, this in a self-defacing way. When we're outside of the courtroom and analyzing the totality of the circumstances, I think sometimes we can lose touch with what the tunnel vision that the judge is giving the jury in their instructions to deliberate upon. We're not bound on the outside with the kind of information that we can weigh or factor into guilt or innocence. And I think that this demonstrates beyond a reasonable doubt, if I can use that term, that the justice system still works, and that lawyer tricks and trying to use tactics to obfuscate the tangible evidence of guilt and try to couch things in a way of semantical defenses, which I think is what happened here. The defense relied too heavily upon Murdoch being charming and a trial lawyer, and the jury saw right through it, and they were they had tunnel vision on what the judge told them to consider. And, you know, ultimately they're right. I don't think there's any doubt that the jury made the right decision. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, from the outside, you know, maybe we get a little too cute, you know, on factoring in the lawyer tactics and how effective certain testimony is. And at the end of the day, the jury is there to find the truth. And frankly, I think they did.
Well, I completely agree, but the lawyer tactics are back at play as of today. The appeal has been filed for Alec Murdaugh, and this may go absolutely nowhere, but it's been filed. So with your knowledge, what are the next steps here when an appeal like this is filed in a case like this?
Well, my experience, and I'm just, you know, theorizing here, mm-hmm. But the first thing that you do when you file an appeal after a jury verdict like this is you start to question the judge's decision making on evidence that was allowed in and evidence that was not allowed in. And the most glaring thing, in my opinion, as a non-lawyer, I think the judge erred in allowing the prosecution and their experts to get down on the floor and do a reconstruction of the murder that had no basis in fact and was just sensational. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a number of other issues that the defense lawyers are going to jump in on saying that this prejudiced the jury, that prejudiced the jury, this was an incorrect ruling by the judge. But in my mind, you know, when the prosecutor got down on all fours and pretended he was Mrs. Murdaugh, and the other expert, you know, simulated, you know, executing her, I think that was beyond the pale.
Yeah.
It was not scientific, and it could have prejudiced the jury.
How interesting when someone goes to that length to do theatrics in the courtroom, the damage that it could actually have after the fact if the verdict that you're seeking is actually found.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what the appellate court is there for,
mm-hmm.
to look at the decisions without passion, you know, because even the judge, you know, we're all human beings. The judge is a person. Everybody's just people doing the best that they can. But it's difficult to just prevent yourself, you know, without regard, mm-hmm. to get swept up into the passion of the case. And, you know, I think the judge made a mistake in allowing the prosecution to do that. Now, whether that's an appealable error that forces a new trial, probably not. But at this point, the defense lawyers are going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, to try to get a new trial. But I think that's probably the tip of the spear, in my estimation.
What's the point of trying to get a new trial for someone like Alec Murdaugh? He's already facing these 99 plus other charges, and God knows what else is going to come out over the next couple of years. He's basically bound to prison for the rest of his life, whether it's this case or not. He's already admitted to the financial crimes, which I'm sure is, I'm curious to see what happens there if he just pleads guilty or if he tries to go to trial on that. At some point, Why keep going? Is it simply to have a name cleared of not going down in history as a man who, on the record, killed his wife and son, but did all these other things? The money that will be spent, and where does he get the money for attorneys and things of this nature at this point?
Well, that's a great question, Tony. I mean, I read some articles and heard some jailhouse recordings where Murdaugh was on the phone with his son Buster and his brother, trying to liquidate assets in part to pay for attorney fees for the trial. But I think that what they're going to try to do is, you know, appeal things and position themselves so that the son Buster has something to inherit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether there's anything to inherit or not, and whether or not Murdaugh gets out of jail or regardless of this case or not, I think that the fatherly instinct at this point for a sober man, regardless of his prior acts, may attempt to preserve some of his estate and holdings for his surviving son. And I think that might angle to work the appeal and try to, you know, save assets maybe at this point. But that's just a guess.
If he wants to continue to appeal, and obviously he has paid attorneys right now, if money does run out, could he then be appointed someone by the state to attempt these appeals?
Yeah, but he would have to show that he's totally insolvent, meaning that he has no property to liquidate, has no assets to liquidate in any way. There's no income to tap into, and that his next of kin also has no resources. My understanding is he was, you know, despite his financial crimes, you know, his property and other holdings have substantial value. But then again, you know, you would think that there would be a civil lawsuit from other interested people, say the family of his wife, their parents, her sisters. They might want to try to file a lawsuit to secure some of those assets in recuperation for her death to compensate her surviving spouses or surviving family members, I should say.
I think there's just much more that's going to happen with Alec Murdaugh in the coming years. I think we think, oh, it's done. We're not done. There's still more to come, whether it be him or other members.
Yeah, they're going to keep peeping along. They'll pop their head out of the gopher hole every once in a while in an attempt to, you know, either save assets for a Hail Mary to try to get him out of jail. But, you know, at this point, the goose is cooked and he's going to start rotting.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Yes, indeed it is. And you got something else I know you want to talk about, Scott. Go real quick.
So just today, I just dropped on Crime Scene Time Machine podcast, available on Spotify, my investigation into the death of Jeffrey Epstein. It's a barn burner, no holds barred. I do a deep dive, 50-minute investigation into the death of Jeffrey Epstein. I urge everybody to go find Crime Scene Time Machine on Spotify. Send me an email. Let me know what you think.
Check that out. I'd be very interested to hear that perspective from a forensic expert like yourself, Scott. Crime Scene Time Machine. Go check that out for his podcast. My name's Tony Bruschi. Be sure to press subscribe on this podcast wherever you download it so you don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we follow for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.